One, I would say, is just somebody who has difficulty saying sorry. I think it's hard for people who already feel bad about themselves to say sorry, because like, I already feel terrible. And if I say sorry, I'm acknowledging I'm wrong, and it just adds to it. Criticism is going to kill connection all day, and it eventually lead to contempt, which is probably the biggest relationship killer. It starts becoming a control mechanism, a way to manipulate you, and you just can't hold up in a healthy way under a constant criticism. It's almost like they are explaining you out of how you feel. And I think the gaslighting is obvious, right? Some of that stuff is so clear, but I think a lot of these are a lot more subtle.
Guys, I can't believe it is season 3 of the podcast, and how time flies. When I started this in 2020 after a disastrous breakup, well, it gave rise to such an amazing podcast where I interview some of the best coaches from around the world. And this man I have on today is also no exception. So I've got a man by the name of Eric Wooten on with me. He is a relationship expert and dynamic speaker and an author. So he's got 15 years of experience as a pastor, a licensed professional counselor, and he helps singles develop healthy dating relationships and couples build strong, thriving marriages. So he also combines his transformative yet easy to digest frameworks and quick wit to help couples of all ages and backgrounds enjoy the journey towards fulfilling relationships that go the distance. So Eric, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. You got to love bios. You always listen to them and you're like, come on, that's cheese ball, or is that even me? I think that got most of it.
Yeah, well, that's it. Now, you also run a YouTube channel. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I started a YouTube channel a few years ago, 2.5 years ago, called Relation Shots. And the idea was just to give practical, applicable things that people can actually apply. I think a lot of my frustration with relationship advice, well, one, because I think a lot of it's foolish, but two, even the good stuff seems more conceptual than applicable. And so I'm like, well, that's a good concept, but how in the heck do I, you know, put that in my relationship? And so the idea was, let me just give some quick hits on different topics and really help people who want to grow a good relationship be able to do it. So that was kind of the heart behind it.
Yeah, cool. So tell us a bit about you then. Like, what's your backstory? Where are you from? Why did you get into this line of work? And were you ever faced with really bad relationships in the past, and then now you're just in an amazing marriage and what have you?
Yeah, that'd be an awesome story. Yeah, used to suck and now I'm amazing. So no, my dad was Army, so grew up as a military kid and born in Germany and lived all over the United States in different places. And so this was never the plan. He was a counselor. So I think I had a lot of conversations growing up that I didn't realize were, you know, probably grooming me to kind of do what I do now, but I never had a desire to do this. Got married early in my early 20s, and my wife and I have been married 28 years now. And yeah, the first 10 years of our marriage sucked. I felt kind of like people were not telling me what it was really about and kind of like, hey, yeah, this will be great, you know, with their fingers crossed. And so we just struggled. I mean, we struggled to figure out how to get along and manage our differences and all that kind of stuff. And then my wife actually had an affair just short of 10 years into our marriage. And so, you know, that's a catalyst moment, a painful moment where you kind of go, yeah, okay, you know, do I really want to walk out forgiveness, reconciliation? You know, what does this kind of stuff look like? And so for us, obviously, we're still together. So it was a moment to create a little deeper connection, more communication. And so I think that probably birthed a desire to help other people actually experience. I'm like, man, if I had some more tools, a little more input, I'd certainly go back and do things different. And so I think that was kind of the start of a passion for doing this.
It's always good to be, I guess, a product of what you do, right? To come from experience. What saved your relationship in those first 10 years? Did you then see a relationship coach, counselor to help you through that stuff? Like, why did she lead astray? Because there's always two sides to every story, I think, in a whole cheating.
Sure. Yeah. And everybody who cheats has a different reason, right? And so it actually turned out to be a real healing moment for her. So the reason we got through it, I would say, was just good community, good people around us, supportive friends, other couples. You know, at that point, we were part of a church community. And so We were in a small group with other couples that met frequently, and we already had, you know, a support structure where it was normal to talk about relationships. So we didn't feel the need to, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, ah, let's hide this. Don't tell anybody. Let's figure this out on our own. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way to go. So I think, yeah, counselors we saw. And so for my wife, it was really a healing moment. She had been sexually abused as a kid, but had really kind of blocked that out. But in it had, you know, obviously created all kinds of an unhealthy relationships, with sex and some of those things. So that, you know, some memories came back, and that's probably a whole different podcast, but that was really a moment for her to go, wow, that's been driving some of my behavior here. Here's a moment of healing. And so it was a moment of healing for her personally. And then, you know, us as a couple to really kind of step in to go, hey, we've been avoiding a lot of stuff that we probably need to deal with if we want to have a healthy relationship.
So you did a lot of your counseling together as a couple through the church that you're a part of. Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do they have this system like that in place, do they?
It depends, you know. Yeah, there's going to be some churches that have nothing for that. There's going to be, you know, some churches that are equipped. So I wouldn't say it was a specific system. We did some professional counseling. She did some more professional counseling on her own. But we had some couples we were connected to that had been through infidelity. So, you know, firsthand experience to say, hey, here's some stuff we did. Here's some stuff you need to talk about. And so it wasn't so much this professional wisdom as it was just kind of support and accountability and encouragement to say, hey, if you're going to work this out, you know, we're here to kind of walk with you.
Yeah, sure. Okay. All right. Well, we're here today. We're going to talk about green, amber, and red flags in relationships. And thank you for sharing all that, Eric, because it's a vulnerable moment in anyone's relationship and life to admit, you know, that's hard. It's hard to deal with. Infidelity is a tough one. So when we're looking at green, amber, and red flags in relationships, these are things that we kind of need to look for, especially in the beginning. Now, we talk a lot about red flags, but there's not a lot about the green and the amber flags. So let's start with, say, the red flags. And maybe let's kind of touch on some of the less common ones that we may not be looking for that are less obvious. They might be sort of a wolf in sheep's clothing, so to speak. So I'll let you take the floor.
Yeah, I think a lot of red flags, I'd almost say the amber flags are the more subtle, because I think a lot of times red flags are pretty obvious. I don't know if we don't want to acknowledge them, but I think there are some amber ones that could be red that can be. But anyway, yeah, let's jump in with some red flags. I think one I would say is just somebody who has difficulty saying sorry.
Yep.
And we may not catch that because there can be a little bit of acknowledgement of, yeah, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. But the reality is one of the keys in relationship is not how much conflict a couple has, but how successful they are at repair attempts. Mm. And so sorry is a repair attempt, right? Sorry is, hey, I'm trying to re-engage. I'm trying to reconnect. And so there's been a ton of research done where couples with a ton of conflict, but great at repair attempts, have healthy relationships. Couples who have not a lot of conflict or maybe no conflict, but they're not good at, I'm sorry. They're not good at stepping back towards each other after a fight, coming back in the morning and saying, how are you? Or still getting you the cup of coffee like they normally do, you know, whatever it might be. And so I think this, if somebody struggles to just really say, hey, I'm sorry. And I want to step back. Not I'm sorry because I feel like it's all my fault, you know? And so a lot of times people will give a sorry, but, you know, sorry, but I wouldn't have done that if you hadn't first, blah, blah, blah. And so I think the ability to say sorry is key, which would why I'd say difficulty saying sorry is a definite red flag, I think.
I don't think people like to admit that they're in the wrong. It's hard. It's actually hard to admit that you stuffed up, I think. Would you agree?
I think it depends on who you are.
Welcome to this short ad break. Not sure if you're aware, but I'm a personal trainer and have been for years now. So if you like the idea of training and being educated on how to eat for better health, then maybe it's time to hire me as your personal coach. You can start feeling confident, self-assured, and healthy again, so you can attract the best kinds of lovers and friendships into your life today. You can apply for online or face-to-face coaching with me, where I will take you through a hybrid fitness system that covers the three pillars to success, where I take you through the deep work of mindset principles and help you achieve breakthroughs, guide you to understand meal preparation for your goals, and customize your weight training program to help you build a healthy physique that you can be proud of. Find the application link in the show notes of this episode. Back to the show.
I think, you know, again, I was watching one of your Instagram, you know, three reasons you're attracted to who you're attracted to or something. And what you hit on a lot is the truth of people operating out of their own woundedness or dysfunction. And so I think if you're healthy, it's not that hard to say sorry, because the reality is we all know we suck. We all know we fall short. I mess up every day. And if you're comfortable with that and you're healthy in who you are, sorry is pretty easy. If you don't, if you feel bad about yourself, because if I already feel bad about myself, acknowledging a sorry I messed up is more confirmation of how bad I am or how I don't measure up. So I think it's hard for people who already feel bad about themselves to say sorry, because like I already feel terrible. And if I say sorry, I'm acknowledging I'm wrong and it just adds to it. So I think the healthier you are, the easier it is to say sorry.
Yeah, right. There's a whole psychology behind that. That's mercy.
Right.
There you go. What other red flags could we look out for?
Yeah, I think people who are highly critical are real red flags, because criticism is going to kill connection all day and it eventually lead to contempt, which is probably the biggest relationship killer. If you are consistently criticized, people who are really highly critical, you know, I'm not going to steer people away from a relationship with somebody in a certain profession, but it's a lot of times the things that make you great in a job, being real critical, finding mistakes to, you know, make those people terrible relationship partners. And so somebody who is highly critical and always seeing what's wrong and, you know, assuming the worst should be a red flag.
I agree with that. And I know that in the past, I remember when there was a moment in my life where I might have been more insecure within myself. I just remember how judgmental I would have been towards people in situations. And then when I kind of moved past that, and then I saw it in a niece, and then I saw it in other people, and I'm like, yeah, they're not really happy in themselves, because I know what that's like. I've been there, you know? So yeah, that's a big one. That's a real big one. And it's just, it almost exhausts you being that way, but then you don't know how else to be, because you're just on that negative mindset. You're just on that wheel. So what else?
Yeah, and I think some people even use criticism as an attempt to kind of influence and change the other person. Like if I don't like the way you dress, if I consistently criticize your dress, I'm believing that you'll kind of change into what I want in order to avoid the criticism. And so for a lot of people, that's why I say I think it's a real red flag, because it starts becoming a control mechanism, a way to manipulate you, and you just can't hold up in a healthy way under constant criticism.
Yep, totally. And what would be, say, one or two more red flags you reckon?
Yeah, I think another one, if we want to go kind of the direction of what you say, where it may be more subtle, I would say somebody who treats people poorly, who really can't do anything for them. I see a lot of people making the mistake of, I really am only focused on how they treat me. Oh, they treat me like a queen. They treat me like a king. They're amazing to me. They're so attentive to me. Yeah. And it almost gets to the point where we go, I don't really care how they treat anybody else, because they treat me so well. But the reality is there's a pattern of consistency that should be there in somebody's life, right? Because if you don't treat the waiter or waitress very well, or you don't treat the person who can't do anything for you down the street very well, there's going to come a time in your relationship when you're going to fall in that category, right? That you're not doing what they want you to do, or they don't really like you in the season, or they're upset in the season. Mm-hmm. You're going to get the same treatment. Mm-hmm. That they give that other person who can't do anything for them. Mm-hmm. If your relationship ever gets to a place where you're not doing what they want. And so I think a lot of times we're willing to overlook it because they treat me so well. And I'm like, nah, I think you want to see some consistency. How do they treat family and friends? How do they treat those who can't do anything for you, for them? And how do they treat you, the romantic partner? There mm-hmm. should be a consistency across those three.
For sure, especially in the beginning of a relationship, like people can mask who they are and they're going to be on their best behavior in the first 3 months anyway. Yeah, it should be kind of a real sort of red flag to go, okay, well, he or she talks everyone else, like he kind of talks down to everyone else, but he's good with me. Well, then he's kind of putting me up on a pedestal. And I'm sure a lot of people have been in that situation where they might have friends that go, your partner's a real asshole. Like, no, but he or she's really good with me now. And then you talk to him 1 or 2 years later, and then it's a totally different story. So, yeah, that's something you really need to sort of take a look at and just don't ignore that. And maybe let's go with one more if you have another one. And
then I would say, I think another one that sometimes can be subtle is just somebody who's emotionally manipulative. Yeah. And some of that's obvious. You know, most people know, hey, gaslighting and some of that kind of stuff. But I think it can be subtle a lot of times too. And so just being aware if, you know, things like the silent treatment, right? They're not happy with you. And so they kind of withdraw and give you the silent treatment. Or the person that you see this back and forth of like praise when they love everything and kind of punishment when they're not getting their way, or just little things, lying in denial that kind of, you know, you're like, I don't necessarily, or even stuff like people who use universal statements, right? The always and never, like you never fill in the blank, or you always, because it's just not true. But because it's so universal, it can make us feel kind of like, maybe I can't. And then even things like minimizing, you know, when you share something or an experience you've had in the relationship, hey, when you did this, it really impacted me this way. And they have a tendency to kind of minimize, I wasn't trying to make you feel that way. And so you shouldn't feel that way because that's not what I was trying to do. And it's almost like they're explaining you out of how you feel. And I think the gaslighting is obvious, right? Some of that stuff is so clear. But I think a lot of these are a lot more subtle, you know, minimizing, you know, a little bit of silent treatment where huge red flags because there's no end to emotional mistreatment. So I think, being emotionally manipulative should be a red flag for you.
Yeah. All right. Then let's go into amber flags. These could be almost on the borderline of green, but with a chance of going into red. Because I believe that red flags could never become green flags, but there's a chance that a green flag can become a red flag. I don't know if you agree with that statement. Do you think that it would be more the amber flag could go either way?
Yeah, I would even lean more towards, I think green flags are going to be stuff that, like, if you find this, this is always positive. But I'm going to have a hard time seeing a green flag ever get to red because these are just things that are healthy. But I think the amber flags are the ones where you go, we need to talk, because this could be some of the red flags, like, you need to quit talking about it, you know, especially things like physical, emotional abuse. We don't need to talk about that. That's dysfunctional, toxic. I don't need to be in a relationship. I think the amber ones are like, let's have some more discussion. This could be a red flag, but if we talk about it and there's understanding and adjustment and clarity, maybe it's not a red flag. I don't know if it would ever be like a green flag, but not a red flag. That would kind of be how I would categorize it.
Yep. Okay. So what are some amber flags then?
Yeah, I think an example would be like debt, right? So not all debt is equal.
Yeah.
So somebody having debt, mortgage on a house, student loans, or maybe they lost a job and we're in a season where they were out of work for 6 months and accumulated some debt. I don't think that's like, oh, red flag, I can't be with you. Somebody who, you know, sees value in a $800 a month car payment, you might go, because I think how we handle money gives you a good indication of what you value. And the inability or ability to delay gratification, right? And so I would definitely, if there's debt, I want to talk about it. Why do you have that debt? You know, how did we get there? What's the source of it? Because it could be a real red flag. Like, this person can't delay gratification, wants something when they want it, makes impulsive decisions, thinks that spending, you know, a house payment on a car every month makes good sense. And you go, Or it could just be, hey, no, you know, I got stuck in a tough situation and got some debt because of it. So I think a debt could be yellow or it could be red.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's interesting. That's really interesting. And then there might be a potential gambling problem as well.
Sure.
Maybe. But I mean, that would probably be much more of a red flag than an amber flag. Okay, so what would be something else that would be an amber flag?
I think I would say somebody who has either strained or absent relationship with family.
Yep.
And so, again, there are some exceptions where a person's family is so toxic that it really is not healthy for them to be in regular relationship.
Yeah.
But if that's not the case, so that would be, okay, it's a yellow flag, it makes sense. But it could also be an indicator they don't resolve conflict well. Mm. It could be an indicator they don't want to resolve conflict. It could be an indicator they have a tendency to write people off when things don't go their way, or they don't want accountability, or whatever it might be. And so I think you want to know, man, if somebody really doesn't have a relationship with their family, let's figure out why. Because that could just be, it could be healthy again. But I think that's a small percentage who have such toxic families. It's like, yeah, I'm better not with my family. The vast majority of people, I think it's probably an indicator, might be a red flag.
Yeah, definitely. And I 100% agree that it's definitely circumstantial. Some people are better off without their families, just depends on what's happened. So, okay, what would be, say, one or two other examples?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple more. And this, people might push back on this. This is my personal opinion, having worked with lots of people in relationships. Yes. Somebody who describes themselves as, quote, private. And so I see that often with, especially guys. So I see a lot of girls who are dating guys who are, quote, private. Like they just, yeah, they're kind of private. They don't really want anybody in their business. Because from experience, there's usually one of two reasons. One, they're shady, right? They're doing some stuff they don't want you to know about. And so, yeah, it's like when you start hearing people like, well, we never really go to his house. We always meet out, or he comes to my house, or I haven't really met his family or friends, or, you know, because they're just kind of private. So either they're doing something shady, you know, they got two or three other partners on the side, or this is not as bad, but still not healthy, would be somebody who's been hurt a lot. And so they just genuinely don't trust a lot of people. They're private because they've been hurt a lot, which makes sense, but also is going to negatively impact your relationship because they're not going to be as trusting. They haven't dealt with the pain in their life and the hurt. And so whenever I hear somebody that's kind of private, I'm like,
A lot of that kind of plays out in their love language around social media use. Like, I find a lot of shady men, for example, or those that are kind of involved with maybe illegal activity or what have you, none of them are on social media. Have you noticed that?
That's interesting. Yeah.
I've got mates, you know, that whether they're involved in whatever the case may be, they're not hurting anyone directly. They're just kind of doing stuff that the government might turn their nose up at, you know, and yeah, none of them are really on social media. So I always find it interesting.
We might have to add that to the list of amber flags, someone who is not active on social media. Because I do know some people that are just like, it's dumb. It's a waste of time. I don't have time. But there's probably a big group of people like you say that are, yeah, they're trying to hide some stuff.
Yeah, every male friend that I know that has been involved in some sort of activity that others would consider a little illegal has not been on social media. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. But Okay, what would be one more?
Yeah, one more I would just say irresponsibility. I think that's one of those things where I'm not going to eliminate somebody right away. I want to be able to address it. You know, somebody who doesn't follow through on things, somebody who maybe lacks taking ownership or responsibility for their behaviors and how it impacts other people. Because some people just have not matured, have never been held accountable, just don't know. They're kind of inherently selfish. But if you address it in a relationship and there's a willingness to adjust and grow, to me, it's no longer a yellow flag. But if you address it and there's no change or willingness to change, to me, it starts dropping back into, okay, that goes into red flag territory for me.
Totally. Yeah, I think as long as there is a willingness to kind of address it and go, yes, you know what? I may not like what you're telling me right now, but I'll marinate on it for like 24 hours. And then like that person might come back and go, you know what? It was hard to hear it, but you're right. I need to change this and that. So I think the key thing is when you see these amber flags is to hit them early, but also be transparent and honest about it and find the best way to kind of communicate it without it sort of breaking down the relationship. Because sometimes if you're too harsh about a situation, especially in the early days, Eric, you might sort of agree, if we're not careful with how we speak to certain people, it might, especially if some people are not good with confrontation and they've got some sort of stuff with trauma, you know, some things might trigger them. If they had an abusive parent and you've come on too strong, but that's part of your culture, for example, if there's a clash of culture, it could really trigger them and go, you know what? I just don't think we're good for each other. But it's like, hang on a minute, that's how I talk. Please address it with me. If you see that as an amber flag, address it with me. I can tone it down. And that's, you know, in the early days, I think that open and transparent communication of back and forth and go, there's something about you here that I don't particularly like. I'm going to question it. Please don't take offense. But if we fix this, we've got a really strong chance of moving forward.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I don't know if there's any others you want to sort of talk about.
No, that's good. I would say for anybody where there's concerns, address them. Because a lot of amber flags could really be red flags, or they could not be as big of a deal, but they're a big deal to you. And if the person's willing to hear it and adjust, I think those flags can kind of disappear.
Yeah, great point. Okay, let's go into green flags then. What are some of the most obvious positive signs about someone you might be dating in the early days?
Yeah, and I think these are not, you know, as we talk about them, nobody's going to be like, oh, I would have never thought about that. But I think the first one I would just say is like clear communication. Somebody who can clearly communicate with you, that's a green flag. Like, hey, if we can get there, you know, and specifically, you know, are they reliable in their communication? Anybody could communicate when things are going well. But when we're under stress, when things are not going well, when things are not ideal, are they still able to and willing to engage and communicate? When I think about communication, I think, are they curious? Are they inquisitive? Is there a desire to gain understanding and really figure out the facts of the argument or detail or whatever it is, more than just I want to express my emotion and that kind of stuff? You know, somebody who is curious, who has a desire to kind of understand your perspective, I feel like you can figure out anything. And then just assertiveness, like, are they specific? Are they direct? There's nothing more frustrating than passive aggressive stuff or somebody who just talks in generalities. It's like, oh, you know, man, it sure be great to have a partner who, you know, thought about calling during the day. And you're like, how about if I just say, hey, Amanda, when I'm not with you, I would feel connected to you if you'd shoot me a text and say, how are you? Or call me in the day. Just be direct. Here's what I desire. Here's what I want. I think so many times we throw out these hints and ambiguous statements. And if they don't catch on, then they don't care. And it's like, we don't need to make it harder than it is. Tell me what you need.
Yes, great point. You know, guys, we're not mind readers. No one's a mind reader. And everyone has different love languages on how they like to express and also receive love. So your love language, Eric, might be that you're better in person than you are on text message. Okay. And your partner might really love a long-winded, cute text messages with emojis so that she's reminded that she's loved. Now, whilst that may not be what you're used to, if she just communicates that to you, I'm sure it wouldn't be that hard for you to kind of adjust to that. So It's just going, look, this is how I like to receive love. Do you reckon you can be on board with that? Because it just would make me feel so much better. But you just let me know what you prefer. And look, people don't go into relationships really knowing how to actually communicate this stuff. I think we go in going, well, you should kind of know how this works. And it's like, well, no one's teaching us and we're not hiring a coach either. This is why more people need to not wait until their relationships are broken before they actually go and seek the correct operation manual on how to navigate this beast, because relationships are hard. No one's seeking the right education around it. So that's why it's hard. Okay, cool. That's a great point. What's another green flag?
Yeah, I think another green flag is just emotional maturity, right? Somebody who can be resilient, somebody who can think of others and not have everything be about them. And I think, you know, what I would put under emotional maturity is somebody who has the ability to think first of others and serve them. If I was looking for a relationship, somebody who is either actively or consistently serves others, especially those who can't do anything for them, that'd be a huge green flag for me. I know, again, in the dating process, you're going to serve me because you want something back from me that makes you feel good. Yeah. But if you see somebody who has the emotional maturity to be selfless and serve others who aren't doing anything for them, that makes me go, oh, guess what? When we get into our relationship and you're pissed at me, or I'm not doing everything that you wish I was doing for you and you feel neglected, you're probably still going to serve me because that's part of who you are. And it's not going to be conditional upon, well, I'm doing it for you, and so you're willing to do it for me. And so for me, under maturity, things like insight, like, are they trying to discover what the other person, you know, things like resilience, things like internalization, can they look at a situation and think about how they may be able to change rather than how the world needs to change for them, right? If you've ever had one of those friends who's had a problem at every job they've been at, and it's always everybody else.
Yeah, I have.
It's a lack of internalization, right? It's like, you're the common denominator, but you don't have the emotional maturity to see that it might be you. So when you see that, that'd be a huge green flag for me. It'd be like, okay.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, actually, when you said conditional, like when love is unconditional, I'll just do it because I want to do it, not because I have an agenda behind why I'm doing it. And I have had friends in the past where they're good people, but yeah, they just can't hold down a job because everyone else in that job is the issue. And it's like, you can still be a good person and have some stuff that you need to work on to figure out why you feel that the whole world is against you. You don't need to necessarily be a bad person for you to keep running into these little roadblocks. And again, when you're a good person, I think you think, well, maybe I don't think I need to seek further help because I'm a good person. So therefore, good things should be happening to me. But then there's the whole trauma that comes at play. And again, you don't need to be a bad person to have trauma either.
Yeah. And it's, so if you got that person who everybody's always disrespecting them and nobody values them, yeah, that can't be the case. And so there's a lack of emotional maturity there.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Would there be one or two more green flags?
Yeah, I'll give you two more. I think mental stability. And when I say that, I don't mean we're all perfect mentally and free of trauma. I mean, do they take personal responsibility for their own mental health? Which means, yeah, if you've got some trauma in your life that has caused some mental health issues, there's a willingness to seek counsel, take medication if need be. Like, you're managing that, that you're willing to say, there's too many people that are unwilling to deal with healing and the work, because it's work, right? It's work to process trauma, to heal, to try to get to a better place. And often it's painful. Yeah. And people who are unwilling to do that at some point are putting a lid on their ability to interact. Back to, you know, a lot of your IG videos talking about, it's our dysfunction that attracts us to people or causes us to want to be in relationships, or you talk a lot about that stuff, and it's true. And so a green flag is somebody who is trying to be self-aware of their mental health and trying to work on it so that it doesn't become a preventative in the relationship. And it's like, I can try as hard as I want in this relationship, but if the other person's not taking responsibility for their own mental health and growth, we're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I don't know if there's any others you want to mention, because then
I'll just give you one more. Just because I think the last one brings us full circle to my story in the beginning. I would say somebody with good community is a green flag. They've got good support system, not only for them, but for accountability. I believe, especially when you get into marriage, the good community is the key for safety and security in marriage. You know, otherwise, what happens when I wake up one day and I decide I don't want to be accountable to my wife? I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to stay out till whenever I want. And you don't get to tell me anything. If I've got good community, my wife can now call some of the people that have relational leverage in my life and say, you know, Eric, he won't listen to me. He's not acting right. He's doing stuff that's destructive to our relationship, and can use other people to hold me accountable to the commitment I made in the relationship. And when I say good community, like, they actually have people who can call them into account. That's a green flag for me, because like, okay, good. Somewhere down the road, when you don't want to be accountable to me, I know you got some people around you who will hold you accountable, and you have a track record of submitting to that. And so I think that's a huge green flag in my book, is that ability to have others hold them accountable.
Totally. I think one of the biggest red flags as well is when someone seems like a really good person, but then they say, oh, I just don't have any friends. And I just think, well, how does a good person not have any friends? What are you doing? What are you not doing in your friendships that you can't hold on to friendships? So I believe some people can go through transition periods where they might have had a complete change of lifestyle. For example, they were once party girl or boy on drugs, drinking, and then they're like, I've had enough of that. I'm going to get into fitness. I'm going to move on from that. And so naturally that will take an evolution and those friends will fall away. And then you'll might have a period where, you know, you're sort of flying solo, you've got drop-in friends, and then you re-find and re-establish your community versus I, for the longest time, have not had a solid group of friends. That's a major red flag, I think. What do you think, Eric? Like, what's your take on that?
I would agree 100%. And yeah. I like what you said about transitions, because I think if we're going to remain healthy, we do need to transition. Like, if I get married, it doesn't mean I ditch all my single friends, but I sure better start developing some of my community being other married people who value that. Otherwise, when I complain back to my single friend about how my marriage is going, they're not going to be fighting for the marriage. They're going to be like, you don't need to deal with all that crap. Come to the club with us, right? And so I think that's a red flag when you're moving into another season. So even dating, I think if you're dating somebody and, you know, you're not 22, you're a little later in life, and that person has zero married friends or friends in long-term relationships, that should be a red flag, because they're never going to get the kind of advice that is pro-relationship from a bunch of single friends who have a different priority. And so, yeah, I think it's a red flag if we don't shift our community as we move into different seasons, whether it's, like you said, transition in lifestyle choices or transition in quality of relationship. I would agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. It's just my own personal experience too over the years, whether it's like making friends with people that you kind of question and go, they're such a nice person. How have they not got friends? But then they'll do something and it doesn't rub off well on you. And you're like, okay, well, I can see how you might have rubbed people up the wrong way. And this is why you probably can't keep friends. So yeah, very interesting. I think, look, a good message to anyone listening is just you really need to take time to get to know people. It's all fine and well. Everyone's on their best behavior. Just remember that first 3 months, everyone's got their mask on. Same thing in the job workspace too. The first 3 months is, you know, give or take the honeymoon phase. And then
absolutely
reality sets in. You start to really speak your mind. You start to really lift that mask off. All your traumas come up, all that sort of business. Anyway, Eric, you and I were having a good chat off air and we're like, right, what are you selling today? What are you pitching? Right, let's just call it for what it is. But then you had a really awesome idea, which I loved. So we're going to look at collaborating and doing some Facebook Lives. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we were talking about, I do a class called Dating Detox. It's a four-week kind of live Zoom class where we just kind of go through rethinking our dating strategy experience. How do we get healthy? You know, let's talk in some red flags and what to look for, what to look out for. And really, I'm finding a lot of singles that are frustrated, disillusioned, and some just hopeless to, like, dating these days is just impossible. And I don't think it is. I think that you can have a fun, enjoyable dating experience if you have the right perspective. But I think a lot of it is we've got the wrong mindset. Even in marriage, I think part of our problem is we've got this fake, romantic, over-romanticized idea about what relationships should be. And when we hold up a healthy, real relationship to this fictitious standard, we get disillusioned. And so the class is just really about, let's challenge some of our beliefs. Let's rethink it. Let's see where we've missed the mark so that we can kind of recalibrate. And so, yeah, we just talked about, man, what fun would it be to, you know, I could go sell a video course on that class or something, but it'd be more fun to jump on here with you and do something live and see if we can help people who are struggling in this area kind of recalibrate and actually enjoy it.
That's amazing. So just for the audience, if they're thinking, oh, that sounds really interesting. So then how would it work? Would it be a case of each week you're going to bring a sort of set structure?
Right? Yeah.
Through that and then kind of like open up for Q&A type situation?
That's exactly what it would be. We'd present a little bit of content, some ideas, some concepts, but let's talk. I want to talk. I don't like listening to myself talk, let alone assume anybody else wants to hear me talk. So I think it's presenting some ideas and challenging some of our beliefs, and then let's talk. Let's give pushback. I don't agree with that. I do agree with that. Well, what about in this situation? And let's just have real conversations about relationship and where we're stuck and where we struggle and how we can all get better. So yeah, a little bit of teaching with a whole lot of discussion to me is a great recipe for growth.
Fantastic. So Guys, stay tuned for that. We will talk more about that because I'm going to bring Eric on again in a couple of weeks. And we're going to talk about preparing engaged couples for marriage. So I think that's going to be an interesting chat as well, because it's obviously a very big commitment and one that people shouldn't take too lightly. Now, in the meantime, people want to come and work with you, right? So who are you best for? Do you have a particular niche when it comes to married couples?
No, I tackle a little bit of everything. And so, you know, I do some classes, I do some one-on-one counseling, I do some 4 and 5 day retreats at resorts around the world just to get away and have fun. And yeah, I've got couples who are in the midst of adultery and real struggle. And then couples who, I have a whole membership community for couples who, you know, want to connect with others and get resourced and really be intentional about strengthening their relationship. So yeah, if you have a relationship, then we can talk.
Yeah. So are you giving away a free gift? I can see you've got a free gift here. Modern Leaders Manifesto. So it's a guide to establishing a relationship rhythm. What does that mean?
Yeah, those are kind of two different things. And we'll put that on altermarriage.com/empowered for you. And so they can download. One is a modern dater's manifesto, just kind of what to look for, what to look out for, and what are we dating for, really? And then the other is for, you know, maybe some couples who are dating, engaged, or even married, really establishing their relationship rhythm. And the reason I believe in intentionality in relationship and the power of being intentional versus, you know, I always say intentionality is more important than chemistry. And so you've heard the 7-year itch, right? You know, the majority of divorces take place within the first 7 years. And then relationship experts say it takes the average couple 8 to 12 years to find their relationship rhythm. So you can see the problem, right? It takes us 8 years to really figure this thing out, but yet we're giving up before we get there. And so for me, helping couples establish a relationship rhythm, I don't think it needs to take 8 years. I think if you're intentional and you're talking about and doing the right things, you can really establish a rhythm that will make sure the right things are happening and we're addressing the wrong things on a regular basis. And so that relationship rhythm will help with that.
Just for people listening out there, how often should they be paying attention to professional help in their relationships?
I think that it should be a regular thing in your life. And so I would dial back to, I believe everybody before you get married should do some level of premarital counseling. And we can talk about that on the next show. Yeah. And I would even say before you get engaged, a lot of people wait till they're engaged with a wedding date. And you're probably not going to call it off because of embarrassment and that kind of stuff. So I tell people, hey, if you've been dating long enough that you're talking about marriage, go do some level of premarital counseling. It will help you talk about the right things, think about the right things, address the right things. And it also sets the tone for, I already know this person is willing to get outside help, which if we get married and there's problems 5 years in, I want to know that the person's willing to. So here, we can add this to the list of red flags. Somebody who is unwilling to go to counseling for the relationship prior to marriage, they're not going to do it when they get married. So yeah, I think doing some premarital sets the tone for that. And then once you're married, if you're intentional, I would say, you know, when you get stuck, when you have issues that you're not able to resolve yourself, because again, statistics show that the average couple waits 5 years too long after they're really having severe problems before they ever seek help. And the longer you wait, the more work you got to do. So I have a lot of couples where it's just regular. You know, we see each other once a quarter and things are great, or more often if you're stuck. And so I think a regular check-in is healthy.
It's kind of like a car service, isn't it? Like the longer you leave, every 10,000 Ks that you skip a service, the more expensive it becomes because spark plugs blow, then the brakes go, then something else goes and the timing belt goes. And before you know it, the first service that would have cost you $350 is now sitting at a pretty $3,000 to $5,000. So good little perspective.
Well, you're a fitness coach. The exact same thing applies, right? If I go to the gym once a month, how successful am I going to be?
Yeah, not very.
Yeah. And so I think, like you say, we apply it to our cars. We apply it to our fitness. Why wouldn't we apply the same thing to our relationships that are of utmost importance?
100%. All right. Well, Eric, we'll quickly wrap it up and then we'll talk about your links below. So when you're not relationship counseling, what are some things that you like to do? Like what hobbies do you like to engage into?
Yeah, I used to say sports stuff, athletics. So I played soccer all growing up and through college and a little after college. but my knees are so bad now that I'm resigned to lifting some weights in the elliptical and a bike at this point. But I do love active stuff. So, you know, going to the gym, I'm a sucker for a beach and a book. So if I can get on vacation somewhere and with a couple good books, you know, leave me alone. I'm great for days. And so, yeah, I would say doing something physical, active, or being in a beautiful place with a book is top of my list.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, you do look fit, Eric. So good on you. And you're in Dallas, Texas, aren't you?
Yeah.
Nice. Have you got the beach close by there?
No, I would never qualify it as beach. I can get to the ocean in about 4.5-5 hours, which is near Houston, but it's like dirty brown water. You got to go way south Texas, almost to Mexico, to kind of get nice, or over to Florida area to get the nice beach. So no, I'll usually try to find somewhere in the Caribbean or Mexico to get a nice beach.
Jesus. So how often would you be able to go on holiday then?
It depends. And so in the past, it hadn't been a whole lot, you know, with my wife and I have 3 daughters who are now 23, 21, and 18. So I'm moving into a phase where I can do more getaways. And then with what I'm doing with relationships, you know, last year I had 2 different 4-day marriage retreats at resorts in Mexico. This year I've got a couple coming up in the Dominican Republic and another one back in Mexico. And so I'm kind of using work to also double as vacation and holiday. So my goal is to be doing those about 4 times a year. And so that allowed me to get a little travel in once a quarter.
You've got to let me know about that one in Mexico. If you do one closer to the end of the year, because me and my partner, we're talking about potentially going to Mexico.
Okay.
So yeah, that could work out really well, actually. That'd be
absolutely. I'll keep you updated.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Eric. So if people want to reach out to you, I'll pop all your details in the show notes below. So we'll have your YouTube channel there. We've got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We'll have that free gift as well. And then we're going to come back in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about pairing engaged couples for marriage. So I just wanted to thank you so much again for coming on the show. And just to all the listeners out there, if you really enjoyed today, just don't be afraid to reach out to either myself or Eric and let us know what you loved about today's episode. Feel free to even take a screenshot of this episode, pop it onto your socials, give me a tag. My tags are in the show notes below. And just share the episode with your friends. Also, give us a review. Give us a 5-star review. Let us know how much you loved us or didn't like it, either way. But you can leave reviews on both iTunes as well as Spotify. So other than that, is there anything, any parting words you want to leave the audience with today, Eric?
No, I think we covered all kinds of stuff. I think the key is to, whether you're married or dating, don't do it alone. Get some good people around you. I think relationships are a group project. Let me say it that way. Whether you're married or dating, you need some other good people around you to have eyes to see red flags you don't. You need support when you're in a relationship. And so, yeah, consider your relationship a group project if you don't.
Yeah, very well said. I think it takes a village to raise a child, and the relationship is that child. So, Eric, thanks again, mate. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.